This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 415, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 415. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me, as always, are Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And Paul
Montgomery.
You sound
amazing. Adios.
Whoa, wait.
Wait, no.
No, that's...
I took art.
We are a fanboy.
I think there's something wrong with your German, boy.
We like comics. We read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. They call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about it on the show, along with other books of the week, other topics of comic book interest, or Band of Brothers lately. Depends on what we're in the mood for. Or what we've watched lately. Before we get going, quick reminder, no worries, a review show.
I'm all gone, yeah, sent you.
So there'll be spoilers for things that happen in the books. So if you read your books yet, pause the show and come back. You'll be happier and less stressed out. Fewer gallstones, kidney stones. Paul, you had to pick.
Is it a good time to actually to pick up Band of Brothers, actually? I think it's like $25 as we're recording this.
But good Lord.
Yeah. The Pacific, too. So the pick, I had I had the honor, pleasure, and privilege of choosing Superman Action Comics number 26 by Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter. I'm so
excited.
Are you
really calling it Superman Action Comics?
Well, it's what it says on the cover.
Just put it on the cover so you know.
The new 52 Superman Action Comics.
They used to do that all the time.
Maybe the reason they ain't been buying it because it ain't said Superman on it. I mean, there's a picture of him, but...
Is that what DiDio sounds like these days?
Yeah. Now the internet and all, they need text searchable terms.
So it's been a while. So, I mean, Josh chose an Action Comics issue, but it was a Lex Luthor issue, really.
That was Charles Soules? Yes.
Yeah, that sounds right. So, yep. But you know, to choose an actual Superman book, it's very excited as a big Superman fan. So this
just a random number, too.
This is, 26. Yeah, it's 26. This team started with 25, and it was sort of like a... I don't know. It was a double feature kind of issue. There were two little short stories.
Yeah.
And that was very good. That was, you know, on another week that might have been a pick of the week. It was very refreshing. But this one, the first full issue, and you've got Lana Lang down in Venezuela, and she's doing some electrical engineering, and they're digging around, and they unearth like a Balrog or something, and Superman's got to go deal with that.
It's Pacific Rim,
yeah, yeah. It's a kaiju, and Superman's got to deal with that. And other than, you know, some references to him dating Wonder Woman and, you know, the costume that we don't exactly love, this is the Superman that I love. This is, I think Greg Pak is especially good with the inner monologue and the character narration stuff, both for Superman and for Lana Lang, and that made this really enjoyable to read. Plus, we always love flashbacks to Smallville, And this has a flashback to Clark getting a bicycle from Pa Kent and riding around on the bicycle. And I sort of love the way that he talks about growing up in the country and the joy of riding a bike and it being like flying. And how does he say? He says, pure dumb kid joy felt like flying. And of course, that all goes horribly wrong because that's when his heat vision decides to activate because it's sort of puberty times, and he gets blown off his bike. And
funny because that's exactly that's the Scott Summers thing. That's exactly right. What happened to Cyclops.
Don't sully this.
Also, Nightcrawler's at the end of it, so there's that.
Yeah, there is. So, and then with his heat vision, he incinerates like the entire
I thought that was the strongest scene. This is the strongest scene in the whole issue. So
yeah, I think that's the key scene. They introduce also this ghost soldier villain who can go intangible and tangible, so he's kind of got like a Kitty Pryde sort of power. This is an X-Men issue of Superman, apparently.
bit of a design problem on the ghost soldier.
Bit of a design problem?
Bit of a design problem.
The Mohawk, or?
Just seems a bit of an anachronism. I'm just saying, oh, look at that. Designed a character. That's cool.
You know, when you look at the page of the ghost soldier like coming up and about to pounce on Superman in flight, and Superman's narration is "Whoa!" This looks a lot like Chris Burnham to me.
Well, let's talk about Aaron Cooter. I think I feel like we're watching him find a style, which is kind of exciting. I've followed his work somewhat for the last couple of years when I first saw him on Green Lantern, New Guardians, and he had a very quietly style. This is a much different style than what he had before, and I like it a lot, actually. What I was thinking about while reading this was, we've talked a lot about how Marvel tends to show more indie style, more experimental art, and this was a very sort of indie style, I thought.
Yeah.
I like the art a lot. I think when I talk about that design, that fits in very well with everything else is indie.
The design aside, I think this is art I expect to see like in an Image book, which is great. For DC.
I see that. I really like that we're starting to see this stuff creep back in.
Yeah.
I think it's sustainable, you know, like it's not. Like they have like their house style, which is, you know, whatever the hell that is. Nice. And then there's a couple other guys that can do 4 issues a year. Right. And this is like daily. A thing that is. Yeah.
But there's still precedent for, like, if you look at the last few pages with the monster back in the Fortress of Solitude in that, you know, in that dome, it feels very All-Star Superman to me, you know, very quietly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all consistent throughout, and I do like this art style as well. So I think this is a great team and gives me a lot of hope for Superman in 2014. This is kind of a rough, turbulent year for Superman between movies and comics. But
I really like, there's a page here.
Yeah.
The one after he boots the kaiju into the sun, and he returns capeless.
Yeah.
That's a really nice page. If you look at like the angle that they're watching in the second panel, the angle that they're watching Superman. Fly down from the first panel. They're looking like, look at the scope that they've given with they're way at the bottom, looking way up into the air. That's a really nice use of a page. And then sort of that nice image in the last panel.
He also has really good aim. Drops that knife hilt right at their feet from way up there.
Yeah, but also a great story moment too, because they're all excited that Superman has gotten rid of this monster, and Superman says they act like I throw monsters into the sun all the time, and that it's not, you know, a tragedy to have to kill a creature.
I mean, it's liberal claptrap garbage, but
well, I did like that. It was sort of the reversal of what you expect the modern Superman is now, right? It's the Man of Steel version. So I thought he did throw the monster into the sun, and I thought that's where we were going with this. But then we find out he's
Nightcrawler.
He brought him to the Fortress of Solitude to live in a little cage. Which, is it worse that he just imprisons the monster as opposed to kills it?
No, he's got his like zoo in there. And
the Fortress of Solitude is, in all intents, a no-kill shelter.
That's true. It's got a weird fish line. Anyway, I think the hope is that
he's going to go out into outer space and explore around and try to find, you know, the creature's home world or something where it can, you know, be with its.
He sits at like outdoor festivals at a table with little cages, hoping that somebody will come adopt them.
That is the way he tells himself. But if you look, he's got a lot of those creatures in those cages, and he doesn't have time to go searching the galaxy for all these creatures' homes. He's in like 4 books.
And that's the inherent sadness of the Superman story, that he's by himself. There's no one else like him except for his cousin, and they throw each other through walls these days.
And Zod.
Yeah, you know.
But, I thought it was pronounced Zod.
Zod. Is there an umlaut over the O?
I don't know.
This was good. I agree with you completely. This was a breath of fresh air. I mean, we talked about how excited we've been because
Pock's been really strong on Superman Batman, although I'm not in love with the current storyline. But
I'm not either. I mean, I get it. Like, it's impressive, but that's a little art. Anyway.
You know, so I was looking forward to his taking over Action, and it's been what I've been hoping for exactly.
Yeah, yeah, and I think these two work really well together. I mean, the story and the art are paired nicely.
Yes. I think Cooter's great.
Yes.
He's really, he's one of the
he's a world-class slide guitar player.
He's a new artist to watch.
I'm sorry. That's Ry Cooter. My bad, again.
I like this Lana Lang version. I like that she's sort of, you know, she's tough, but she's not like, you know, super badass. She's out there being an electrical engineer in Venezuela, but she will pick
she's
up a machine
adventurer.
Gun.
She knows
who Superman is.
Yeah, which is a fun dynamic.
It's nice to get away from Lois a little bit.
Well,
and
that's
also
what Superman says.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Right.
So, this was fun. I liked it.
I don't know that I would have made this pick of the week. I enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. I definitely would have given pick of the week to Velvet Number 2.
Okay.
For me.
Well, let's talk about Velvet Number 2.
Were we done with this?
That was a very smooth segue, Josh.
I thought the first issue was pretty good, but I think this issue really actually did a better job of setting up the scene. This might have been a nice thing to do as a 2-for-1 first issue. Okay. Maybe. But this
well, the first
actually,
issue already was like 40 pages.
The first issue was like a cold open action scene. I didn't know anything that was
going
on.
I really liked
the
first issue a lot.
Yeah, but this one was the one where like I totally get it now. I know exactly what's going on. I know who this character is. It's super throwbacky, you know. It's ridiculous. There was one where she says something like, "Then they delivered the X-14 to the whatever." And I was like, "Oh." It had to be the files. I requisitioned X-14's field reports this morning. So who inside ARC-7 could know about that?
Right.
Like, that's ridiculous. And it had those cool little the fighting scenes. It had those cool little diagrams.
That was my favorite bit, was that remembering the training, and it was showing the 1950s style field manual training drawings.
And then another thing that happened is in the middle of this book was – literally the middle – was the first – set of pages that I have seen in a really long time that I thought I'd really like to own those pages. And it was the journey through her cases in time. Mm. East Berlin 1949, Monaco 1951. As he's looking at the files and smoking his cigarettes, you see her like in action. I just thought those two pages would look awesome up on the wall next to each other.
Yeah.
And just that story, I thought I just had a lot of fun with
that. Thing
and,
is
and
great it, in this book. I like this issue a lot. I love the first issue. I like this one a lot. He did a great car chase in the beginning, and dealing with a great car crash. You know, artists don't like to draw that stuff, but he does it really well.
But they're little like British cars from the 70s too, not American muscle cars.
Little boxy things.
Yeah,
he's perfect for this. You know, I mean, Captain America was basically an espionage book when he drew it with Brubaker, and then now they're doing a straight up espionage book.
Like he's a great ground level artist. Meaning, you know, like I had mentioned that panel in the Action Comics where you sort of were looking up or whatever. But this one, it's like we'd say street level or whatever. But I'm just like where the camera is down here with the people and making that dramatic. You know, you're at eye level view with the cars that are flying down these rainy, choked streets in Britain. And I was there. Like I was very, very much put you in the middle of everything.
Yeah, great for action sequences. He's good for, you know, guys in smoke filled rooms.
Yelling at each other.
At each other, going over dossiers and stuff.
None of them will turn the lights on. No. Keep those lights off.
It's like a harder, not only harder edge, it's like a more action packed Queen of Country, it felt like. You know, I mean, it's
with the
same 70s
vibe.
It's a really interesting tone because, like, you mentioned the X-14 stuff and there's, you know, like the flying squirrel suit, which is kind of wacky. And, you know, other writers and artists would be tempted to do something more like, I don't know, like an Flint kind of camp heightened sort of thing. And this is they play it totally straight.
Yeah, but without needing to, like, do the Warren Ellis thing, which would be to totally explain the molecular, how it works.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or to, like, base it in science. No, it's a flying squirrel suit. And you just go, well, it's the 70s. That's fine. Mm-hmm. She's got a streak of white in her hair. It's fine.
It's not that much different than what parachuters use now. So
it's in every there's in every video game that comes out these days. They have a sequence where you have to go around in the flying suit and steer around skyscrapers and stuff. But
I live on the second floor. Do you think I could use that to jump down to my car?
I think you should.
Okay.
I think you should put that together. Go over to the Home Depot.
How hard could this be? I just get a piece of fabric, sew it up to my knees and up to my wrist and.
Aging hipster killed in ridiculous stunt.
I mean, just stupid.
I don't even have anything to say about it. It was insane.
I'm not dead. I'm on the second floor. I'm just really hurting.
this aging was, hipster has insurance problems. Coming
really,
up after this.
Yeah, that's the bigger problem. I think this was, this is really good. This is one of my favorite Image. We're going to talk about Image later, but this, you know, they're doing really, really great stuff. And they're not doing everything. I don't love everything they're doing, but there's a couple of books of theirs that I just, like, love. I'm excited when the next issue comes out. This is one of them. This is, like, the up there with Saga and Jupiter's Legacy and Manhattan Project, things like that.
So am I the only one who read Inhumanity number one?
No, because you put it on the list, you jerk.
Yeah, so I read it.
You sound mad at me.
I was like, why are we talking about this?
I didn't want to, but I've liked the Inhumans, but I haven't really liked any Inhuman stories I've read in a really long time.
Well, my problem with it is not so much the issue, it's just the larger picture of the fact that the never-ending event cycle that Marvel has embraced, while it works for them business sense, which is the only sense they really care about, it takes away the specialness of the event. I didn't even realize this was happening this week.
I didn't either.
And usually with an event, you want to have an excitement build. You want to be ready for it and excited about what's going to happen. And now this one, I didn't even realize Infinity ended. Wasn't that last week? So this is, we have
people were mad at us that we didn't talk about it.
Literally 1 week between events now, and it doesn't. It takes away this. It doesn't feel like an event. It doesn't feel like there's an event starting at Marvel because
just before you continue, just since people were asking about it, I'm the only one who was really reading Infinity, and I enjoyed it. So,
you didn't need the qualifier thing. Really, you were the only one reading it.
Yeah, I was the only. and I
blowing
was,
it for us.
I was no, and I was sort of tired of being an apologist for it on every week it came out. So I just stopped talking about it. But I did enjoy it. I agree with you. There should be a little bit more padding between that and
just,
this.
It doesn't feel like an event. I assume it is. It's.
If I may counterpoint, I didn't read Infinity. I don't keep up with most of this stuff. I just read the books when they come out. I was like, hey, it's Inhumans by Olivia Coipel. I'll give it a shot. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this must have to do with what happened before. And I jumped in and picked up, and I'm cool with that.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I wasn't even thinking of it as an event. I certainly didn't until I got to the end.
Right.
I just sort of put it together. But I had to give it a shot. I'm always half and half on Matt Fraction. I like a lot of stuff he does a lot, and I don't like other stuff he does.
This was good Fraction.
And it's funny because this was super serious, super like 70s comics.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like where Karnak, I love Karnak.
He's a fantastic mustache. Fantastic.
I think
mustache.
That he looks ridiculous. He's got the big old Kirby helmet, and I love that his power is he sees the flaws in everything. And the psychological sort of way that works on him, I think, is really interesting. I liked that basically put him in a Hulk-proof cell, which is made of glass.
Well, it's Wakandian crystal. Let's give it
whatever
respect it deserves.
But it was the one thing where I think it's Iron Man. It's like, has anyone noticed he's drawn on the glass? And I was like, thank you for calling that out.
that was Hawkeye. And Iron Man said, don't worry about it. Let him, which was dumb. Yeah.
It was Iron Man's hubris again. I was very surprised by the ending. I like how everyone just showed up in that room. There was no reason. Medusa, you're here. Okay, it's fine.
There were things. I mean, I liked that it was Fraction writing his Hawkeye, basically, in a group setting.
It seemed like a much more mature version of him, though.
Slightly. He was still like he slept through the briefing and he didn't really know what was going on. And he didn't, you know, he wasn't the guy that got beat up in the fight.
For years, they ignored him. You can't blame him for the way that he's going to be. He learned that.
My problem is, you know, you get to the end and it's like the checklist. And I would read this story, a miniseries written by Fraction, drawn by Coipel. I'd read that. But I'm not going to jump to these other books, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not.
Just read what you want to read.
Yeah. Whoever that is, it that Nick Bradshaw cover for the next one though.
Yeah.
That's a great piece of art right there. Mm. Yep. That's fantastic. This was good. It looked great. It was a fun little thing. If it all falls apart, so be it. But it was a nice little surprise, I thought, because I wasn't really expecting it.
So Earth 2 number 18. This is the second issue from Justin Jordan. Paul, is that his name?
Yes.
No.
No.
That is another writer. You talk about it, I'll look it up for you.
This is the second issue without James Robinson, and this is the guy who wrote the crazy Injustice storyline, right, Paul?
That's right.
I'm right about that.
No, that's definitely not Justin Jordan.
Yeah, and he's bringing a little bit of that crazy to this, and I'm actually really enjoyed it. In this issue, there's a lot of things going on.
It's the guy from Unwritten. It's Tom Taylor.
Right.
Tom Taylor, that's how we remember. Tom Taylor, the character from another comic book.
So this issue, the Parademons have attacked, Darkseid's minions have attacked Earth 2 again, and while that's going on, Batman is skulking around and freeing people from the Earth Army's prison, and at the end he walks up to the Joker's cell and puts a bullet in his head. It's crazy. I actually had a lot of fun with it.
So the Joker's dead, and he's killed the Joker in two different universes.
Yes.
The Superman put his fist through him in
way. Batman has snuck into the Earth Army's prison to free people, and people are trying to stop him, and Red Tornado, who's also Lois Lane, which is also crazy, is there helping him. He frees like Aquaman, and he frees some other people to help fight the coming war. But then he walks to the Joker cell, and they all think he's going to free the Joker, and they're like, no, he's crazy, don't. And he grabs the gun from the soldier, and he puts a bullet in the Joker's head. Oh, it's nuts. It's nuts.
But still not over the first issue of that one book, the Injustice book I read.
Right. And then the bad Superman here, he fights the Flash. The Flash, gets away from him, but Superman catches him, takes him by the ankle, and snaps in half. I think the fact that this book, they can just sort of go off the leash is fun. Because there's no, it's Earth 2. They can do whatever they want.
It's a chain.
It is kind of interesting to see an alternate reality story that it's its own ongoing series and it's just continuing.
Right.
It's sort of like that idea with The Walking Dead where you have the zombie invasion and then usually the movie stops there, but they continue on and tell the rest of the story. So it's kind of interesting to see a long format version of that with alternate realities. Also out this week, Hellboy in Hell number 5. I don't remember when number 4 came out. It's been a while.
Yeah.
I thought the series had ended, quite frankly.
I think I did too. I think it just assumed
it did. It got delayed. He had to... Nope, I was about to make a joke about Mignola's art, and even I don't have that in me.
Wow, we would have kicked you off the show.
If you were to take all the words off of this, all of the pages look exactly the same as all the other pages that we've seen so far.
That's reasonable, I think.
And I don't like to say it, because I think that he is one of the most important comic creators in our lifetime, certainly. And I think that, obviously, if you look what his work has wrought, but this series is just... It is a bit like being in hell.
I wouldn't say it's that bad.
It's not that bad, but I think given the expectation of saying, oh, sweet, Mignola's coming back, he's going to draw this thing, and it's sort of cumbersome and plodding. And
steered it into the doldrums a bit.
Yeah, and it got interesting for a little bit in this one. And he keeps me – I have no idea. I figure it's just in some sort of – limbo version of hell and there's
no he's
down.
I mean, he's in hell, and it's just the idea is sort of that it's kind of abstract. He wanders around, and what's really abstract about this one is he meets this guy, this captain.
This part I loved. I thought this part was good. And go ahead.
And he died in, what was it, 1819? They say at the end. And so obviously Hellboy went to hell way after that. But he bumps into this guy anyway. And so it's sort of, I don't know, there's this weird logic to it that's, it's like a fairy tale a bit. And previously in the Hellboy in Hell series, Hellboy, unbeknownst to him, killed Satan. Like he blacked out for a bit and
that
slit Satan's, went into Satan's throne room and killed him, and now all of hell is in chaos, and all the princes of hell have sort of abandoned Pandemonium, which is the crown city of hell. So
is he going to, is the end game here that Hellboy is going to become, like, take the crown and be, Satan, be Lord of
Hell? I think everything is pushing him towards that. Obviously, Hellboy himself is not interested in
I know, but it's role. One of those things, it's like a Chekhov's gun thing. Like, they've really set us up for that. And if the thing at the end, no one wants the promotion that sucks. So, but you get it. Because you're like, well, I guess I'll do this thing. And that seems to be more compelling. That if you just take those two choices, that's more compelling than Hellboy at the end going, crap, and walking away.
Right.
That's a crappy ending. So that feels like that's where we're going to end up.
Although there is a bit of fun in the idea of Satan going, crap.
Yeah. Well, we saw that in Preacher, but not Satan, but God. I really liked the little story about the guy, and I kind of wanted to play around with that. It's not like it would have thrown off the narrative from its direction.
Well, I think it's supposed to be sort of aimless at this point, where what is it like for Hellboy to be in hell? And let's have fun with this for a little while. And sort of he's not the main character.
Yeah.
It's sort of he's meeting people on the road. It's a road story.
And I understand that, and it makes sense theoretically. I don't find it to be terribly compelling, and I think that's the problem.
Well, it's sort of like an anthology, and you've always hate that.
Yeah, you wait a long time
for it. You're telling different stories.
The other thing that helps for me, yes, it does look a lot like the previous issues of Hellboy in Hell and a lot of the other, you know, Hellboy issues that Mignola has done, especially in the past few years. But I think the fact that they're spaced out so much helps a little bit, because every once in a while, it's fun to go back and look at it. Nobody draws skulls as good as Mike Mignola does. And I still enjoy that. And I still enjoy the forms and what Dave Stewart's doing with the colors. Don't start again. So I kind of like this as a little bit of a fairy tale with Hellboy as the shepherd through this weird landscape where nothing quite makes sense. And I love the design of the dragon, demon, the big eyes and everything. And it was fun, but, you know, it wasn't the pick of the week.
Josh, there's not many shopping days left till Christmas, right?
like the other day, somebody was like, 3 weeks till Christmas. And I was like, when did this happen?
Exactly.
So if you're like me, and I'm guessing the other two people on this call, and I'm guessing the thousands of other people listening to this right now, Amazon Prime is looking pretty good right now. If you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, that's a way that you can help the site, but also if you're doing a lot of shopping through there. Say that, for example, just say that you work from home and you never get away from your computer and you don't really have time to go out shopping because on the weekends you've got a well, it's a honey-do list. We'll call it that. And you've got stuff to do, and you're not making it to the toy stores for the kids or for whoever else. Amazon.com, there's your answer. And if you want to help iFanboy out, like we said, we get a little piece of it if you go through our link. So do that. And
also,
then,
it's about human companionship for you, right? The UPS guy comes. You have a little chat about the Pats.
I'm telling you.
Until the drones.
People are talking about putting the local businesses out of it. I like my UPS guy. I want him to keep working. And the other day, at one point, we had the FedEx guy delivered something here, and I was like, this isn't us. He goes, oh, I was just used to coming here. my favorite was the UPS guy one time, just finally. It was like after we'd lived here for like a year, he's just like, what do you do?
I had a conversation with my FedEx guy the other day about PlayStation 4 versus Xbox One.
Nice.
And it kept on going.
I had a really long conversation with the UPS guy about marketing, and it was really long in that he wouldn't stop talking. And it was just like, I was like, well, what's your slogan now? It's a logistics, something like that? And yeah, and then he just kept going. I was like, all right, well, you're into your company. That's good. Anyway, the point being, order stuff if that works out good for you, and do it in a way that helps us if you're so inclined. And we thank you very much for that. You can also go to help us more directly at ifanboy.com/registration. And that way you can be a directly contributing member for our new, we think, reasonable rates. If you like the show that we put on here, $3 a month or $30 a year, that's just a way to very kindly throw your support behind it and keep us doing this and keeping the lights on and just the hard costs of putting this stuff going. I'm going to sneeze now, so carry on.
We're also downgrading our light bulbs. We're going to like those fluorescents, so we're going to save more
energy. It's a higher upfront cost. We're not going to
upgrade
lie.
To light bulbs, Paul.
It is an upgrade, you're right.
Yeah, CFL.
But, yeah.
I've been buying the LED ones. Should I not have been buying the LED ones?
We got the. Ooh, I want those.
I've got like two.
LED bike light.
Yeah.
Indy Hulk Annual number one. Another tease from Jeff Parker.
I was like, what's this? Jeff Parker and Mahmood Asrar.
Yeah.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yeah. We're counting down the days until Jeff Parker gets to do his Aquaman book, which is soon, right?
Yeah, I feel like we've been talking about it for a while.
We just had the last
week
Jeff
was
Johns
Jeff
one.
Johns' last issue, so the next month.
So yeah, okay. So this is him doing the Science Bros from the Avengers movie, because it's sort of a team up between Bruce Banner and Tony Stark. So you get some Iron Man action, you get some Hulk action in there, and they go to an island where this scientist has basically taken over the island, and he's become the island. So he's got this big head of stone in there in his little sanctum sanctorum, and he's controlling everything that's going on there, and they got to solve it. And there's a wonderful opening scene where young Tony Stark and young Bruce Banner are at like a young geniuses convention, and this same scientist, sorry, spoilers, who ends up being an island later, is giving a lecture and telling them, you know, the only way you're going to get anywhere with science and make a name for yourself is if you latch onto the military industrial complex and So for Tony, who's like, yeah, that's what I'm doing anyway. That's kind of what I'm doing. And Bruce Banner's like, well, but I don't want to. And the guy's like, well, you're not going to go anywhere. And, you know, the Hulk went on to have his own world war named after him. So fuck that guy.
And he got a little think tank in the Shield now.
He is working with the military.
I want to make a point that I learned that I sorted out this as I was reading this issue. I believe that Jeff Parker is the natural successor to Mark Waid.
Okay.
And I don't just mean like in that he's doing the Hulk or whatever. Like the way that he writes stories, the way that he uses his imagination and sets things up. He can do like one issue stories and things like that in his characters and sort of the little bit of sense of humor. I think they're very similar. I mean, that's a big compliment.
No, I think you're right. I mean, if you look at this issue, I mean, just the level of insight he has about each of the characters and then how they relate to each other.
I could watch Banner and Stark camping for quite a while.
Yeah, I kind of wanted more of this. It was like, oh, yeah. It's only just one, you know, thing. It's one annual. And then and I think you could sort of say that Mahmoud Azrar is sort of in the same camp in that he's a really versatile superhero artist.
Yeah.
He did great stuff on Supergirl, and then he's done his, you know, the Dynamo 5 stuff, and I think you could put him anywhere, and I think he would tell great action stories, and you know, all the characters are very expressive, so the whole package.
Yeah,
I've been saying for a while he's one of the underrated guys in comics, and
yeah,
he is,
and maybe he's going to finally get his due soon.
I think next year we'll be talking about him a lot more.
Yeah,
which is good. It's a great thing. Have you guys heard of this Reality Check book?
It was on the scripts.
Yeah. It's a weird book, and I'm not fully putting my endorsement behind it, but I kept, like, every once in a while you read a book that you're like, I don't know that I like that, but you just keep reading it. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I don't. It's this book about a comic book writer artist whose character comes to life, and he works out some psychological shit in the end. And
like Cool World.
I've never seen Cool World, but yes. I assume it's a lot like that. But, like, his character's like a... like a horny Batman.
Wait a minute.
It's not great.
Who published it? Who did the? Who's responsible?
It's Image. It's written by Glenn Brunswick. I think Glenn. That's the name. He did a few things for. Yeah, it is Glenn. And then the artist is Victor Bogdanovich. It was an odd little book, and I'm not necessarily recommending it. But if any of the things that I said sound interesting to you, it was a weird experiment, and I. You could check that out. The fourth issue was the last one here, so there'll be a trade, but you could buy the issues. I'm sure they're still around. That's all.
Okay, the Secret Avengers set 12 came out this week, and it was the first issue co-written by Alice Cott, who we've been really enjoying on zero. Stupid numbers. Numbers are hard. Zero, and he's probably also, I think, one of the big up-and-coming writers in comics right now. And so this is him co-writing with Nick Spencer, with art by Butch Geis. And it was a bit of a drop in the middle. It's the first part of a new arc, but it was a bit of a drop in the middle of the story. But I was able to glean what was going on enough because I hadn't been reading the book before. Fun, sort of wacky, you know, superhero spy adventures. So taking on AIM, Taskmaster's in there. Coulson's the main character. I think if, you know, Marvel does the usual thing they do with co-writers, which is the new guy takes over the book, and Alice Cott ends up taking over this full time, then, you know, it'll be really interesting to see him do sort of a wackier superhero espionage story.
He is taking over it full time.
I assume he is.
He is, yeah. He is. He's taking over, and he's doing that and Iron Patriot.
Right. So I would say if you want to jump on that now, if you're enjoying Zero or you want to check out one of the best new writers in comics, I think he is.
And it's Black Widow and Hawkeye.
Black Widow, Hawkeye, fake Nick Fury, Coulson, Maria Hill. Listen, I like him in the movies. I just miss old Nick Fury.
I do too.
Hawkeye, Black Widow, Mockingbird, Iron Patriot, Hulk, Taskmaster, who I didn't realize till now was on the team, but now that makes sense looking back on the story. With Maria Hill, Nick Fury, and Phil Coulson from the Shield side leading the everything, or fake Nick Fury. I thought it was fun. If you liked, I think you guys would enjoy it. Check it out. Secret Avengers 12.
All right. Remember last week that I said it was literally, I think it literally came out last week or maybe the
it
week
did.
Before.
Yeah.
Same team though. Way to go. Young Avengers 13 came out. And last week I was like, I don't know what's going on. I just wanted to report back that this week I'm pretty sure I know what's going on and it's over now. So that's fine. But at least they cleared it up. That was the thing. It was Loki the whole time. He didn't even know it was him, which really explains how I didn't know it was him. Because if he didn't know it, how am I going to?
It's very meta.
It was really meta, but it makes sense. It worked out for me. America Chavez got a bunch of fun lines. We learned about the power of love.
From Huey Lewis?
Yeah. No. No.
I always like Huey Lewis to tell me the lessons about life and mostly about love. And he's good lessons about love.
When you've loved and lost like Frank has, you can tell me what that's from. I'll be impressed. It's Spinal Tap. All right. Anyway, Bruno Kirby.
So they have two more issues?
I guess. They could end here.
The next thing is the New Year's sort of party, the
right. And then
season ender.
Is the last one.
And that's sort of an anthology kind of thing, a two-parter.
Oh, Josh is going to hate it.
That's not necessary.
I know Jamie's doing the first story and the last story.
The problem with anthologies is usually one of consistency. If the stories are good, then you can keep up your momentum.
If things are good,
then they're good.
If something is good, right. It would be good.
I like when things are good. When things are not good, I don't like them.
All right, I got a Christmas gift for each of you. You can't see it right now, but it's a gesture I'm making.
Perfect.
Towards my mom.
That's good because that's what I got for you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like the gift of the Magi.
Yeah.
Green Arrow 26. I wanted
shove
to talk
it up
about
your narrow because, Irish ass.
Because I feel like the only the negative I have about this book is that I don't really care about Green Arrow's supporting cast. And I think they're annoying, and I think they need to go away. And I think if they're going to ape the show, and they already introduced Diggle, they might as well just recreate the dynamic from the show, because it works really well.
I think I agree with you, yeah.
The two people whose names are dumb, who I can't even remember, but one of them is spelled really weird. It's like there's no consonants or vowels in it, one of the two. They're stupid. And they're annoying. And I think
it's just his tech team, but...
Yeah. You know, just go for it. Just recreate the show dynamic. Get Diggle in there, introduce Felicity...
I think they should because it's sort of I think I said about it last time that it's confusing that it's so close,
right.
Like, and they're doing all the island stuff, and yeah. That's what they do on the TV show, and you know there's already an Arrow TV show book that goes
book,
along.
Yeah.
Is it still going? Yeah,
I think I'm reading it.
But yeah, so it's kind of, and you know Shadow's in there, and Shadow's a character on the TV show, yeah. And Diggle's a character on the TV show.
Well,
so
a character on the TV show at this point,
right? Book's beautiful.
I never realized that word was supposed to sound like the word shadow.
I think I only know that because of the TV show.
Yeah, like I don't watch it, so
what,
that
like I was watching it with the captions on.
Yeah, I just was thinking it was like some ninja name, like Shadow.
I never
said it out loud, so it didn't occur to me.
I probably would have pronounced it Shadow as well, but
that W is crucial.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's what needs to happen. Otherwise, I really do enjoy the book.
I'm right there with you in that. I don't watch the show, but I keep reading it. Because there's something I like about it, but it's missing something also.
Yeah.
It's the several groups that are conspiring.
I also am not thrilled about this whole Avatar thing, which DC seems to really be fond of. They do it all the time with the
it's like the rings and
but they've always all through the years they've done it of like I am the Avatar of the thing, and it's like okay, just let him be Green Arrow. Is that enough? Too much?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just have him
I
be
agree.
Green Arrow. It doesn't need to be the Avatar of the
like
Arrow,
it.
Whatever the hell that means.
I like it being his choice rather than a thing that he found out was foisted on him.
Remember they tried
his...
to do it with Spider-Man? Remember JM tried to do that with the totem, the spider totem?
Yeah.
Remember how they're still doing it with the Amazing Spider-Man movies?
Is that
like
a thing?
The trailer. Well, he's not an Avatar of like a spider or something, but like the predestiny and that his parents were involved in Oscorp stuff.
I don't like that.
It's much more powerful when the choice is made by a human to be a hero rather than it's their destiny to do so. I mean, that's fine. It's good to have
because
those
of their circumstances. Like, there's things that happen that make it, you know,
they're heroic, and it's fine. You can have those stories, but if every hero is predestined to be who they are, then it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
There's no tension within there.
It's sort of it's the lost thing that everything is connected, and I don't need everything. Everything can become connected, but it shouldn't be because of any kind of predestiny. Yeah.
So. But still, I think it's a good book.
You guys are just godless heathens. You don't think there's a plan.
Change those things that I said to change, because...
Hey, I have an excuse. I was an Ultra server.
Those are the books of the week we wanted to talk about.
I don't even know what that is.
Now let us move to the iFanny Awards.
The iFannies.
We're saying
that's uncomfortable. That's uncomfortable when we say it out loud, isn't it?
All the people in Britain just fell off their chairs laughing. The iFannies... Which
you guys chose the name.
You're
right?
Joking,
you chose the name.
I don't recall ever emailing that name in my entire life.
No, you chose the iFanboy brand. I was typing up the script and I said, you know what? It's the iFanny.
It should be clear. We're not happy about that either.
I think we've made that pretty clear.
So the last few years on the website, we have gone through and done our year end picks for best of various things. We had all the staff do and we did all kinds of great lists and it was wonderful. Since we don't do that anymore, we decided we would take the top categories here and talk about them on the show. And do our picks for certain things of the year. And we're going to go through those now. The first, we're going to lead off with the book of the year. Now, how this works is we've taken all of the books of the month as our nominees, and out of those choices, we have picked the book of the year. And just quickly run down the nominees from the year. January was Fear Agent Library Edition of Volume 1. February was The One Trick Ripoff and Deep Cuts. March was Thor the Mighty Avenger Complete Collection. April was Peanut. May was Mind Management Volume 1. June was Superman's Secret Identity. July was Strange Attractors. There was no Book of the Month in August or September as we were switching over out of the website. October was Jack Kirby's OMAC, One Man Army Corps. November was The Fifth Beetle, the Brian Epstein story. And December was Hellboy, the Midnight Circus. And that means our Book of the Year was...
The Fifth Beetle, the Brian Epstein story by Vivek Tiwari, Andrew C. Robinson, Kyle Baker, and Philip Simon as published by Dark Horse Comics. This was a unanimous decision.
This is totally
on all of
is
our parts.
The easiest choice to make.
Yep.
Soon to be a major motion picture.
Yeah, they just got a director this week.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's good.
Yeah, this was the book that we read.
By the way, I can't wait to argue about Beatles castings.
I think we all knew this was happening. I think if you listen to the show where we talked about it, it was pretty clear this was going to be the book of the year. This was a Tale of Sand, Asterios Polyp, Parker scenario where nothing else.
The book of the year is usually not that hard. Like to pick that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the first one we did, Book of the Year, was the only time we ever really debated it.
Yeah.
But this was a clear choice. I'm already thinking about getting this for a bunch of people for Christmas who don't necessarily read comics, but, you know, are music fans or whatever. But this is a great, great book from Dark Horse. One of the best in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever Andrew C. Robinson is doing next, I'd want to be, you know, part of it. I want to check it out.
It's funny because the writer, I think this has been like a lifelong passion project. It's got to do with the book, but he's also working on the movie and just getting this story told or whatever. But Andrew C. Robinson, I feel like I've seen his art before.
Yes, definitely.
But this is one of those
next level things.
Look what you just did. Not even that was. This is like two steps. I mean, right. Immediately when you're looking at the art in this book, you're saying this is somebody who took an enormous leap and made something that worked so well. It was super impressive. It's nice to see old Kyle Baker, too.
One of the things that the book did was got me to finally start to read that Beatles biography that came out in 2007.
The Spitz one?
Yes.
I finished that.
I had that. I got it for Christmas for the year it came out. I've had it on my to-read stack for 5 years.
That's a good one.
So I finally...
That one's good.
Because of reading The Fifth Beetle, I finally started reading that, and I'm like 100 pages into it already.
Nice. They talk about the...
A very small percentage of the book.
Talk about Epstein's crush. I am I'm on year three of reading Godland, and I should be done anytime now.
Okay, perfect. So that was the iFanboy Book of the Year, The Fifth Beetle. Now let's talk about, we have three categories, best artist, best writer, best series. And what we did was we said, let's all each pick one. And for two of the three categories, we got three different answers. And for one category, there was a consensus choice for the category. So let's start with best artist. Josh, your best artist 2013 is?
I chose Daniel Acuna, which a bit of an underdog maybe, but maybe a surprise dark horse, not dark horse, but you know what I mean. I found this was really tough. There's so much good art, and I'm just glad that you guys also got answers and we got to spread it out a little bit. But when I was thinking about sort of the story, in mainstream comics or wherever that really impressed me, and I did a pick of the week on one of the Uncanny Avengers issues that he did. He was doing something that looked better than what he used to do, something that reminded me of both new and old in sort of superhero comic book art. It just, I thought it was really great stuff. It made me think of Kirby, but it also made me sort of look towards the future at the same time. And every time we've seen him from the first time he showed up doing Green Lantern issues a while back, do we like this? I mean, huge, huge advantage, huge, huge change. And so that was like one of the stories that stood out in my mind this year. It was the one I picked, along with what you guys said. I couldn't disagree with either of those either. So,
Paul, your best artist 2013.
I went with Isad Rebic, artist on Thor, God of Thunder, and a couple other projects that he's worked on. He did Battle of the Atom. Not our favorite issue, but it still looked beautiful. But yeah, this guy reminds me of some of my favorite artists like Frank Frazetta and N.C. Wyeth. I grew up with a book of Treasure Island. He did illustrations on that. And Isad Rebic just conveys like this amazing grandeur and gravity to any page he touches. And I don't know. It was just a jaw-hanging open kind of appreciation for his work this year.
Definitely, definitely. My best artist of 2013 was Chris Somney, artist of Daredevil, and he didn't do The Rocketeer this year, right? That was last year.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
Daredevil's enough. Continues to be one of my favorites, and he's my favorite for this year. It's a style that I've loved for years. It's the throwback cartoony style that is
ink brush,
deceptively simple, heavy on shadow, and just beautiful to look at. He can draw everything. I think
heavy on shadow. I know what you're saying, and I understand it because it's the way that he draws. But it's not dark.
No, it's not dark.
You know, like when you look at, like we were talking about Velvet earlier. That's heavy on shadow.
Yeah. But he starts from shadow. Right. Like, that's how he looks at forms. Yeah. I remember he said
that. He draws backwards.
He's lighting-based.
He draws backwards. He draws the shadows, and there forms the images. But he does full backgrounds. The thing about his work I love the most is his work feels very lived in, that the world feels very real. You know, there's a lot of artists, and they're great artists, and I like their work, where you get a guy in front of a blank background, and that's fine. But, you know, I just think of those great Daredevil pages where you see the entire background and it's full of detail and it feels very much like a real world, and it helps to sort of create that reality of the book. And I every time I see his work, even the daily sketches he does and puts out on Instagram or on Twitter, I wish he drew every book that I read because I just love his style so much. So he's my favorite artist 2013. So let's jump to best writer. We'll mix it up, and I'll say my best writer 2013 was Brian K. Vaughan for Saga and The Private Eye. For many years in this show, we talk a lot about Brian K. Vaughan, how much we love his work, and he was one of our best writer nominees for years and years. But he went away to do TV for a while, came back with a thunder these last couple years, and the introduction of The Private Eye this year, his digital-only book with Marcos Martin, it reminds me of how much I love his voice as a writer and how his crazy imagination. And also, beyond his comic work, I just absolutely love his letter column. That might be my favorite piece of writing in comics every month is his letter column. But he's my favorite writer by far.
I went with Jason Aaron. It seems glaringly obvious to me. Like I was like, how do I not do that? We marveled about his. He's been a writer of the year for us before. This is not the first time, but he's arguably better now than he was then.
Oh, totally.
Which is really impressive. Scalped for years was my favorite ongoing comic book. He hasn't done that in a year, but he's still. The range of his work continually astounds me. That he can work so well in such different tones and different books and move things around. The work that he did on Thor, to our sort of unanimous wonder, and then at the same time, you go over to stuff that I'm reading X-Men books.
Right.
People who are listening to this, if you've been around a long time, I don't read X-Men books.
No, you don't like them.
And I've been reading them, like a bunch of them, for like a year now. And I'm reading two Jason Aaron X-Men books, and that's too many, but I'm still doing it because I like what he's slinging. I just feel like he's locked in. You know what I think is rad is that we talked to him a long time ago, and he told us his favorite character, he was on the video show, so his favorite character was Ben Grimm. He still hasn't gotten a chance to do that. And now I'm like, let's do a Jason Aaron Fantastic Four. Let's make that happen.
Mm.
You know, I think that would be great, but I'd love to see like a different kind of thing that he could do. But you know, if it was only based on Thor: God of Thunder alone, I would still hand it to him for the year.
He was our writer of the year last year.
Literally, he's gotten it a bunch of times. Yeah, him and Jeff Johns for like 3 years.
Yeah, it was because that was the end of Scalped and everything like that. So great couple of years.
Best writer.
Okay, my best writer of 2013, and you'll see some patterns forming that we all kind of like some of the same books. And so I went with Mark Waid, especially for his work. He's dabbled in a lot of different things this year, but the big ones are Daredevil and Indestructible Hulk.
Did you just say I went with him especially for his work?
Yes.
Connor, what'd you base yours on?
I did.
I like Somni as a person. That's really
I went off into another nice clause.
Guy. It's okay.
His work on Daredevil and Indestructible Hulk. he has, as we were talking about earlier when we were talking about Jeff Parker, who I think is the same way, is he has great insight into characters and relationships. So with Daredevil, it's been great from the start, and the artists have been great from the start, but he. Went into this great level of pathos this year with the story with Foggy, that cancer story.
Yes.
This has been just incredibly touching and also not overly sentimental. Like it's very honest and just a great depiction of friendship. And it's something that, I don't know, there are great relationships in superhero comics, but I think Mark Waid has, is sort of the grandmaster keyed into who these characters are and what matters to them.
He's a wily veteran.
the same thing as with Bruce Banner and Hulk, and having a great friendship between. I love that story with the Hulk and Daredevil teamed up. So always a guarantee of good times.
And he finally got. Did he get his due this year? Was this year he won the Eisner? Or was it last year? No, it was last year. Anyway, he's great.
Boy, the years are all blending together.
It really does blend together. They? The older you get, the faster it goes. So those.
That's
the,
what. That's where we want to go with this show.
The best writer. So
let's talk about my hip.
For best series of 2000, I can talk about my back all day if you want to do that. Best series of 2013. This was our consensus pick. We all ended up picking the same book. So Paul, why don't you tell us what the best series of 2013 was?
Verily, it was Thor, God of Thunder.
Yes.
I was so excited when I heard about this book when you know it was just coming out, and I was like, that this team is fantastic. It's a perfect match. For Thor, a perfect voice. This book gave us Old King Thor. We had three versions of Thor in a series.
All great.
And a great villain in the aggressive agnostic Gore the God Butcher. It's a nonstop, beautiful book. It even had that great story after the God Butcher or the God Bomb wrapped up, where we have Thor going around Midgard and another cancer story with Jane Foster. And her new boyfriend and Thor saying, I'll go, you know, throughout the Nine Realms and I will find a solution for this. And she says, no, I want to fight this on my own. And it just sort of hit me out of nowhere.
And then he takes her on a goat ride.
He takes her on a goat ride. Had the goats. Wonderful book, top to bottom.
Totally. I was looking through the list of books we'd picked, the books I'd read, and there was no choice. I mean, every issue of that book was fantastic. The 12-ish part story stuck the landing. Great characters, great action. It was easily the best book of the year.
I think that's important that it stuck the landing. There are a lot of great stories, and there were a lot of great stories this year that we really enjoyed the build up to. There's a lot of great beginnings, and you know, we ended up picking a lot of number one issues and talking about a lot of number one issues throughout the year. We don't always talk about the last issue or end up celebrating as much as we did with this series. So
that's harder. I mean, just in general,
endings are hard.
Just the expectations that totally stuck the landing.
Now, this year, Publisher of the Year was a bit of a debate amongst the three of us who the Publisher of the Year would be. There was two strong contenders, but I think in the end, the choice was clear.
And this is interesting. Before you say it, all that we just did, mostly, was talk about Marvel.
Right.
So you would think that it would go one way because they were very strong books, but go on.
Publisher of the Year 2013 is Image Comics. And Josh, why don't you explain why we chose Image over Marvel, which was the debate we had.
Well, I mean, our best friend went to work there. So.
Of course.
I mean, I think it's clear. No, I honestly, that makes us want to choose it less. I want everyone to know that. I think that if you look at what has happened to Image Comics over the past few years and how they have shifted the way that they put material out and the kind of material out, I mean, we were literally, even if you didn't like everything, they weren't putting out.
I can't imagine anybody would like everything.
That's the point. They put out so much diversity of content and genre that you couldn't pin it down. And they did it. They weren't doing superheroes. And they thrived and succeeded by introducing quality and variety.
Well, they do.
From
they
a
do.
Lot
like,
of different
they
places.
They have even superheroes. They've got Invincible. I mean, they literally have every kind of story.
Yeah, I know, but it wasn't focused on it. It was definitely less than in the past. They really gave us a bunch of... We used to complain a lot more about genre being a problem, having enough different genre being a problem. But now, like we have a lot to choose from, and so much of it, they really have taken over the space that Vertigo once held.
Right.
In a big way. And every week, it feels like there's new stuff. You know, that's one of their little marketing whatever.
I don't think there's any publisher that really explores the medium that like Image does.
And it's really hard to look at it and not see the value in their sort of publishing mantra is that the creators own everything they do. You know, they're just basically Image is picking books that they think people will like and things that are good and you know, we've seen people really flourish under that. You've gotten a place that like big time creators can go and also small time guys can go and they both get that same you know, blank canvas to draw on. And I literally every week I'm amazed. I'm reading more Image books now than I ever have. And there's a ton of things that we can point our fingers at and say,
yeah, let's talk about some of the books. Let's talk about some of the books and some of the creators that make it the publisher of the year. So, I mean, Saga is a big one. It's a, you know, sort of the blockbuster success, I think. And then there's, I mean, each of us like, you know, different things. Like I really latched on to things like Pretty Deadly and Satellite Sam. I think we all like Satellite Sam.
Yep.
Yeah. Amazingly so. Or like we've been talking about Three lately, how kind of a crazy different historical comic that is.
Zero, Manhattan Projects.
Velvet.
Yep. Velvet.
Revival. Prophet.
Revival's great. I know. There's literally so many. You know, you go down to Ghosted or I'm looking now because there was so many.
They put out tons of interesting material, but lots of great, you know, Black Science and
Sex, I think, is.
Sex is a great
sex
book.
Sex is one of the best books that's been out this year.
Sex Criminals I've enjoyed.
There's a lot. I think it says a lot. East of West. I think it says a lot that there's a lot of high-profile creators are popping up there with books now.
And they're making it work.
Because they're making Lazarus. They're making it work. They're making independent comics work. And you're getting a lot of really exciting work coming out of these guys. Really, really good. I don't think it's a question. I mean, I think you can make a case for Marvel. You can make that case, but I don't think at the end there's really any choice. But
I think you could almost say that Marvel is following Image's lead in a way in picking out, you know, some diverse artists and not steering toward a house style. So it's the things that I like about Marvel are the things that sort of Image was already doing and championing.
And the thing is, this isn't because of Ron. This is in spite of Ron because he's doing his level best to destroy that company.
We looked for reasons,
So
sabotage.
Why don't we revisit that Morrissey autobio comic again?
That was their publisher of the year 2013, Image Comics. So we had Thor: God of Thunder best series, and we had a bunch of writers and artists as the best writers and artists. And then book of the year was the Fifth Beatle Brian Epstein story. So those are our choices for the top year end list thingies, listicles, whatever the fuck people call them.
The iFannies.
The iFan. I wouldn't.
I never said that.
I did.
I didn't say that.
Next week, come back, and we're going to, on our last Pick of the Week show of the year, we're going to go over the Pick of the Week by the numbers. We're going to run down the math on all of our choices this year. So
what's our golden popcorn? What's our Nickelodeon blimp? What's our trophy look like? What does an iFanny look like?
We'll have someone in England design it. How about that?
Bronze sideburn.
So before we go, let's do a couple of questions. We're running long, but what the fuck? It's the end of the year.
Okay.
This first email comes from someone who seems to be an amalgam of Paul and Ron. He is Paul Richards, which is strange.
I'll read it. Since the return of Thanos and Star-Lord.
That's just stupid.
That's what I'm saying. Since the return of Thanos and Star-Lord, I have been waiting for the return of Richard Rider. However, with the introduction of Sam Alexander and Star-Lord, quote, not wanting to talk about it, quote, this looks less and less likely, at least anytime soon. I'd even settle for a mention about what happened in the Cancerverse. You'd think that someone would be curious how Thanos got back. It's not like he's just trying to destroy the universe or anything. This got me thinking for at least 3 hours.
Nice.
About the other hand-waving and don't look over here as in comics. And another example is Havoc, who's became a villain, apparently died, then was back because of other dimensions. And I was curious what some of your most frustrating and favorite moments like this are. As a follow-up, if you have time, what do you think they do with all the statues made of heroes that fall heroically in battle and then come back?
Well, Alicia Masters loves this because she's constantly getting work, making new statues, and they destroy one, they got to make it back up again. Obviously, the closet is the biggest, most unexplained story that's ever happened, and they wave that away.
And there are some new listeners who don't know what we're referring to when we mention that.
Google
so
it.
It's from New Avengers
26,
from back around when I started reading comics again.
Yeah. It's the callous way in which they've waved their hand away from it.
Thing is, what people don't know is every time we went on a press, or every time Ron went on a press conference with Bendis, he would end with a question about the closet, and Bendis would just get more and more frustrated with Ron.
To the point that when I would go on press conferences with Bendis, and he would ask me if I'm going to ask that, because I represent
Ron's
organization.
What they don't understand about us, and what no one's ever really understood about us, is that the more you make it a thing, the more we will make it a thing. We, you know, for years we'd made fun of Fables fans because you all wrote in angry emails about the jokes. If you never wrote in about it, we wouldn't do it.
You hear that, Canada?
Exactly, Canadians. So the closet thing is probably the biggest one. I'm a fan of just waving it away. That's the only way you can really do it because it's never all going to make sense. I liked when Captain America died in the 90s and they brought him back with a bunch of levers and a magical machine and never explained it. They said, he's back. And that's the best way to do it.
The closet thing we can all complain about and be fine. Right. I love it when they do this.
Yeah.
I love it, and I this is totally like this is the perspective of a guy who's been reading comics for a really long time, and has gotten over all that shit. When I was younger, I'd want to know too. Now I love it because it really bugs people. It gets people's panties all twisted up over something that just doesn't matter, and I think that's really funny. And it's cool because they do it now, and they just are like, yeah, don't worry about it.
But
it's
that's,
here.
But they do it now because that's also how they used to do it, and mm-hmm. because the readership was different, people didn't care. Or understand because they just started reading comics and they were 8. But, you know, that's just the way you have to do it when your character lives for 80 years.
And there's good reason. It's like a forest fire. It's healthy sometimes. Yeah.
My favorite, I agree.
That's a really good analogy.
It is. My favorite is the Batman age dilemma.
Right.
Or Punisher or whoever. I love it when you have to just go, eh. You know, yeah. What do you want? It's not going to make sense. I know that Frank Castle was in Vietnam. I mean, the Honduras. And I mean, Iraq. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. Yeah. I'm cool with that.
It's the way that has to be done. I mean, the closet's funny only because it's become a thing.
I think the last time it really bothered me was when Peter Parker had like 3 jobs and he was a superhero.
Right.
And now I think it's hilarious. Like now I want them to keep getting Peter Parker getting new jobs.
Well, he's
and
dead.
Don't talk.
So
he's never coming back. Did he come back this week?
I don't know. I don't read the Spider-Man books.
So
we should have talked about that shit.
Yeah, we're gonna get emails. But I don't think it's an example of bad writing that the new writer doesn't solve all of the problems that the previous writer set out and then tie up all those loose ends.
Right.
Nor do I think it's always the previous writer's fault because they don't know how much time they're gonna have on the book. So obviously you should have a plan, but I don't hold them to task too much. And I think for the new writers, I think it's good writing to just say, I'm not going to get bogged down in that. I'm just going to forge ahead and do what matters and not be a slave to that bad writing.
But really the point is, what the fuck happened in the closet is the main takeaway from this entire discussion.
We really have no idea why Clinton is back. That's the point, right? We don't know because Hawkeye was dead and now he's not.
Right. Not like this. And then
they just didn't. He saw. He went and he bedded Wanda Maximoff.
That's what
looked in the closet, was horrified, and then he's back on the Avengers.
Right.
Never. I kind of like it now.
We'll never know. And the thing is, what they actually reveal will never be as good as whatever is in our heads.
No, not at all. But I want to know what he was. I want to know what the point was. What he was thinking.
I think it was Gozer.
The Gozerian.
It was Gozer the Gozerian.
Oh.
It was the rectification of Valdrani.
Are you a god, Clint?
So let's do another quick one.
Clint!
No. Let's. We're running a little long.
Oh, fine.
I'm just going by the chat window.
Is how you write us to get on the show. 888-FANBOYS-226-2697 is how you call us to get on the show with your questions or comments or concerns. And also, always tell us your name and where you're from. Paul Richards sounds like a fake name, though. Next time it's going to be Josh Kilpatrick. Let's do a couple plugs. Paul, you put out a new show this week I completely forgot about.
Yeah, we did a Booksplode, me and Timmy Wood. We talked about Doctor Strange, The Oath by Brian K. Wood and Marcus Martin.
Vaughn.
What did I say?
Brian K. Wood.
That's not a person.
No.
Brian Wood is a person. Brian K. Vaughn and Marcus Martin, which came out like 7 years ago.
I recall enjoying that at the time.
Yeah, it's a great little, it's a 5-issue miniseries. And it reads very quickly. And they just came out with like a new edition of the trade earlier this year. So go check that out. We had a good time talking about that. And why there isn't, a Doctor Strange ongoing series. Like, why isn't there more Doctor Strange? Because this is so much fun. And writers are always talking about, I love old Doctor Strange stories and I would love to write that character. You don't hear that as much anymore.
People buying comics.
That's correct. So that's kind of the thing we came to. We got some holiday episodes coming up.
Quick update on the schedule. Not update, but just a reminder. So next week we have episode 416, which is the last Pick Week episode of the year. And then the week after that, you'll have the year-end all-media podcast, which we go over what we enjoyed in films and TVs and all kinds of things for the year. The week after that that's the show that would be out 12/29. There's no show. We're off that week. And then we'll return with episode 417 with a new episode the first week of January. So next week will be the final time for talking about comics for the 2013. In the meantime, head over to ifanboy.com, comment on this show, tell us what you thought of the books of the week, tell us if Peter Parker came back because we don't read Spider-Man. It'd be good to know, just for general edification. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/iFanboy, at Facebook at facebook.com/iFanboy. That's where we'll tell you what the pick is before the show comes out. That way you're ready to read along at home. You know, read along with the book.
And you don't know when that's going to happen. It's just whenever we're ready.
Whenever we finally get to read our books.
We'll decide. It's fine.
We're taking it back.
Contact iFanboy.com, like we said, or call the voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with your comments or questions. We're getting good voicemails lately. Keep that up because they are fun for us and the emails.
Yeah, and if you dig this kind of thing, and you can review this episode. I thought this was a good one.
Where
so you can go by this episode.
I look for very close to 1,000.
Oh, wow,
really? 920 something.
Head over to iTunes, write us a review. Tell all these people who are coming to your house, who are swarming upon your house for this holiday season, tell them about iFanboy. Evangelize us.
Do you think if Around Comics was still around, they would have close to 1,000 reviews that
no.
an average 5 stars over
no.
1,000 reviews?
No.
Probably not, I'm guessing.
We'll never know.
Oh, boy. So the show just ends like that, does it?
Just ends.
Yeah, I dropped a mic.
All right, next week was the final show of the year. We'll be until then. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I am Josh. I got nothing.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.